Well, I think the cost per shipped has risen since 2010 when the Pentagon decided to go and build three of these ships rather than seven. So you're talking about a shipbuilding program that's about 12.8 billion or so for just the construction of the ships, with an additional $9.1 billion in research and development. So, if you do the math, that comes out to a little bit more than $4 billion a ship, and that's quite a bit of money over the original estimates for how much the DDG 1000s were going to cost. And part of that is because the reduction of numbers down to three.
What's causing these delays in the Zumwalt program that you've been writing about?
So the heart of the Zumwalt destroyers is a very complicated, very complex system known as the integrated power system, which is completely unique to the Zumwalt class, and it has a lot of promise as a system to be used on Navy ships. So instead of having a direct mechanical connection to the props or the propulsion system from your main engines, your gas turbines that are inside the ship, the gas turbines instead power a giant electrical grid, and you have giant electrical motors that go and move the ship and provide energy to the propulsion system and move the ship through the water. The advantage of that is you have all sorts of extra margins as to additional power for systems and sensors and weapons, and it gives you a lot of flexibility, and it could be more efficient than some of the other systems out there. The problem is the Navy really hasn't done one of these before. They experimented with them a little bit in atomic or I'm sorry, they experimented with them a little bit with nuclear attack submarines in the 60s and the 70s, sort of that same idea of an electric ship concept. But the problem is the system is completely complex, and it's so new and it's so complicated that there's been some teething problems, obviously.
So it's far more complicated and onerous than they originally thought, these integrated power systems.
Well, I mean, the integrated power system is just—it's never been done before. I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's just like, how complicated is it going to be? Well, you can bound the problem as much as you can, but once you actually get down to actual installation and construction and all of that stuff, they had a land-based facility to go and prove out the concept. But it's one thing to test the system on land versus another to actually install it and test it on the ship. And sort of to make sure that all of these individual components on this integrated power system, or IPS, are aligned and working properly, the Navy has decided to do a very comprehensive testing program, with the first ship, to make sure that all of the components are working correctly.
And I think you mentioned that it's difficult to find skilled enough electricians to work on it. Is that another factor?
That is something that several sources have told us and informed a lot of the stuff that we were doing, and I think that's indicative of some of the moves that Bath management has made to go and try and get electricians for other components or from other units inside General Dynamics, including Electric Boat down in Groton, and then electricians from NASSCO out in San Diego. So that is one thing that, from the people that we've talked to, that's come up again and again, is electricians and the lack of them, in the yard in general, has been a deciding factor for delays in both parts of the line, or in both lines of ships.
Do you think that, given that the first ship, the Zumwalt itself, is basically completed, that now that these problems have really been, they've dealt with them, and things are going to get better?
Well, I think it might be too soon to say, whether or not they've dealt with the problems or not. Certainly the Navy and Bath have both been reluctant to talk to us about it, for sure. But whether or not, how much more work needs to get done to improve the efficiency, it's not clear. because I don't think anybody's being particularly forthcoming with the information or sort of what the schedules are going to be. So, and the other thing to think about is the Zumwalt is going to be, you know, best estimate it'll go underway for the first time by December, but you know, that's almost 6 months from now until then to see whether or not, you know, the ship will be ready to go. I mean, it's still a lot of time to go and do things, you know, and right now the schedules are just estimates.
So what kind of effect is this having on other programs at the yard?
Well, so the DDG 1000 is starting to, you know, and some of the efforts with the DDG 1000 construction are in part starting to have a knock-on effect to construction for the DDG 51 line, the Arleigh Burkes, the restart ships that Bath won in 2011 as part of the 2009 Arleigh Burke restart program. Specifically as to, you know, what is being affected as part of the DDG 51 line relative to, you know, the Zumwalt construction, it's not particularly clear, and the Navy and Bath both haven't been forthcoming as to what the specific issues are. But Bath is known for quality of construction, but it has run into problems historically when it has to do with when it has to build two or more ship lines at once. There was, you know, I think sort of the last time in recent memory when that was an issue was when the Bath was finishing up the CG-47 or the Ticonderoga class cruisers, and it was transitioning over to the Arleigh Burke destroyers, and because of the composition of the yard and how small it is relative to some other facilities in the U.S., there was the yard struggled to go and work on both of those ship lines at the same time, and you know, it led to some of the delays in the original Arleigh Burke.
How big a factor has the DDG 1000 work issue been in making BIW competitive with Huntington Ingalls?
I think all told, you know, the numbers pretty much speak for themselves. So if you look at in 2011, when early work was starting on the DDG 1000 and the yard was more or less finishing up construction on the DDG 51, the original flight 2A's, the yard was very competitive with HII, and they came in, you know, in a split three ship contract where the winner would get two ships and the number two, the second place, would get one. BIW was very competitive and had a bid that came in well below what HII had. Well, you fast forward that from 2011 to 2013 in June. BIW's price per hull per ship in a 9-year multi-year deal that the Navy awarded was actually higher than in 2011. And that's unusual when it comes to multi-year ship construction, because usually if you have a multi-year ship construction, you'll know more well in advance, you know, what the long lead materials are going to be. You can be a little bit more competitive, you know, as far as buying in bulk and buying your materials in bulk. And also you have what they call a learning curve with the ships. Even, you know, BIW had some space between the original Burkes that it was building and then the restart Burkes that was that were awarded in 2011. And, you know, by then you would have you should be having a learning curve where you can go and look for efficiencies and look for new ways to do things. And General Dynamics, pretty much across all three of their yards at NASCO and Electric Boat and BIW have always had a pretty good reputation for finding efficiencies. I think arguably Electric Boat is one of the most efficient yards in the country, if not the world, when it comes to naval construction. So that's seeing that business unit come out with price per hull that was actually higher than the initial contract award was surprising when that happened in 2013.
And given what you've heard from your sources, I mean, you're inferring that a big factor in this is the difficulty of the Zumwalt IPS system.
Well, it's difficult to put a percentage on it, but that, you know, the difficulty of the Zumwalt IPS, how much space those three ships are taking in the yard, you know, how much, you know, relearning does the workforce at BIW need to do to go and build the Arleigh Burke restart ships, and additionally, you know, how much are the ongoing sort of labor issues over at the yard. You know, I think all of those combine together into, you know, the situation in which the yard and the Navy is in now.
What has BIW and the Navy said to you when you were doing this piece, when you said, you know, what you were going to report and what you'd heard?
Well, they both issued statements saying that they were committed to improving efficiency in the yard wherever they can, and they didn't directly address any of the overhangs or extended production schedules for the Arleigh Burkes.
What about the DDG 1000?
They said that they were committed to finding efficiencies in both lines and didn't directly, specifically for the DDG 1000, they said they were committed to finding more efficiencies and reiterated how complex the systems were. And we wanted to make sure that everyone, you know, when people read our piece online, that, you know, the Navy and BIW's comments were reflected, and we printed them at the end of the article in completely as to, you know, their responses to direct questions on the issue with the lines.
Now, do you think, you know, when BIW won the contracts for the Zumwalt back in 2009, I guess it seemed like a pretty big deal for the shipyard. Do you think now, in retrospect, the Zumwalts have been more trouble than they're worth, and BIW would perhaps have been better off if they'd never seen them?
It's an impossible question to answer whether or not the yard's going to be better off, because it's still in the middle of negotiating its way through the construction of this, and the Navy's in the middle of negotiating its way through the construction of this. And, you know, the Navy's announced plan in 2001 to completely transform the surface fleet. You know, no one thought they were going to be built in 2001. Actually, even in 2007, 2008, no one thought it still wasn't clear whether or not the Navy was still going to build Arleigh Burkes as a ship. The path forward was still, at that point, it was still a next-generation cruiser in the DDG 1000s as part of the Navy's 2001 plan to completely transform the surface force. But then ultimately, all of it was considered unaffordable in 2009. The Pentagon, you know, and the Navy made the decision to go and buy, you know, Arleigh Burkes again and to restart the line. I mean, that wasn't the plan. The plan was to end the and the Burkes at DDG 112, and then go on to a new ship design, and then, you know, but costs and you know, the amount of money that the new ships would cost, the next generation cruiser and then the DDG 1000, just made them unaffordable in an era where the focus was on Iraq and Afghanistan. And in an era where budgets are contracting.